Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free until they win. Find out more information at forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial #law, that is #529 from your cell phone, and that is forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement. Hey, Mormon from Evo! Welcome to Lovey Las Vegas for Cusco Soups with myself, Greg Eames Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. We've got a great podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by Justin Perry. He does such great work over at Chalk Wall, you best. We're going to be diving in on the nooks and crannies, for lack of a better term, in terms of college basketball, how to gauge teams that play a demonstratively fast or slow tempo, some of the things that have been working out for him in terms of conference play, the value of live betting as well, as I know that he does a great job with this over at Chalk Wall, you best, and their best cast. So we'll talk about that, dive in a little bit on the card for Friday as well. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis out of a game on the betting board for this college basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, whatever, for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at @GDN_81. Keep in mind, letter CM, the Amy does not matter, so per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter /X questions today, but we had a fun day of college basketball on Thursday. Let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better. UC Irvine is now 12-4 against the spread as they absolutely take it to Cal State Fullerton. And for those that know me, I've been on Operation Cal State Fullerton all season long, and they have only covered 4 games, by the way, Cal State Fullerton, as they have fallen this one by a count of 82-62. This was a closing number in a lot of places of a 19.5. They opened up more around 20.5, so if you bet it early, you got there with Fullerton. If you bet it late, you got there with Irvine. But for UC Irvine, they do a rock-solid job of winning the turnover battle 12-7. They win the rebound battle 51-47. And for Fullerton, they go 7-25 from the floor, and they shoot 31.5% from the floor. So UC Irvine really will put the clamps down out there. They have been one of your most profitable teams in all of college basketball. As this team has been a team that has been a pretty good bulldozer as well. UC San Diego, 80-54 all over Long Beach State. As for San Diego, they're now 11-4 against the spread. And for UC San Diego, they go 9-19 from 3 points. They shoot 57.5% from the floor. They win the turnover battle 15-10. A nice performance with Tyler McGee being able to supply the team with 25 points. So two teams out there in the Big West making you some big time money as of right now. Not a ton of ranked teams in action on Friday, as you did have both of the ranked teams that were on the road not get the job done. I'm currently doing this as Gonzaga versus Oregon State is going on, so we'll see if it's 0-3. But that's at Temple. We give our own to Lane Kiffin. Go Owls, 88-81 winners over Memphis. For Memphis, they go just 6-21 from 3-point. And they did go 21-31 at the free throw line, albeit Temple also went 21-34 at the free throw line. But Jamal Mashburn Jr., despite going 4-16 from the floor, 11-12 at the charity stripe, 21 points for Temple. They lose the turnover battle 15-10, but they absolutely plowed on the glass. Memphis lost a rebound battle 49-25. That is not great to say the least, as Shane DeZoni off the bench had 15 points, 13 rebounds for Temple, and that's a big reason why they lost this one. Minnesota had covered just 2 games since opening night entering into Thursday, and they get the job done all right on the money line against Michigan. 84-81 the finals. Michigan goes 11-22 from 3, but the theme for Michigan has been the turnovers, and they lose a turnover battle 13-6, albeit a little bit better than what they have been in the past. But Dawson Garcia hits a logo 3 at the end of overtime to be able to give Minnesota the win. Danny Wolf did at 23 points, 10 rebounds for Michigan, but still a case where they were unable to get the job done. And for the Big Ten in general, we have seen a lot of intrigue with a lot of these teams, as Northwestern and Maryland is a game that went to overtime. There was uncertainty as to whether or not Brooks Barnheiser was going to play in this game, and Northwestern very fortunate that he was able to play in this game, as they do find a way to get the win, this by a count of 76-74. As for Maryland, they go 6-20 from 3-point, 6-19 for Northwestern, but Barnheiser, 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. Nick Martinelli, he throws in their 22 points as well, and for Northwestern, they win the turnover battle 16-13, so they do find a way to persevere and get the job done out out there, and Northwestern now 9-7-1 against the spread. Rutgers has been rough against the spread, 7-10-1 against the spread, but now they've covered each other last two, and they've won their last two outright as an underdog. 85-82, they go on the road and they get it done against Nebraska. Nebraska goes 9-22 from three-point range. Carter Sejan, who's been all over the place, does give the team 12 points, but Rutgers was 12-29 from three, and Dylan Harper looks like he's back from injury. 21 points, 3-8 from three. Ace Bailey, 24 points, 11 boards. He goes 4-7 from three-point range, albeit Rutgers also went 7-14 at the free throw line, but they were able to do a rock-solid job in terms of the turnover battle, only lost that by a count of 8-7, and they find a way to persevere and get the job done. So that was relatively fun out there in the Coastal Conference. It has been very interesting to see what we've gotten there this year, as Evelyn has been your top cover team in that conference. They are currently 13-4 against the spread, and they got the job done once again on Thursday, 65-54. They take down Drexel, as Drexel goes 8-24 from three, but they lose the rebound battle 33-25. You had Sam Sherry throwing their 19 points, 9 rebounds. Matthew Van Komen, the 7'4" big man, did not have a single point in this game for Elon, and they still find a way to be able to get the job done. So that was quite striking. And Frampton, they go to 11-4 against the spread. They open up as a 2.5-point underdog. They close as a 3.5-point underdog. They lose by 3, 67-64. The final, I personally wrote it up at a 2.5, so I took the loss on that one with my write-up. But that said, with Hampton, they win the turnover battle by a count of 16-13. They win the rebound battle 32-29. They're just a bit cold from 3, as for William Mary, well, both of them want to combine 8-20 from 3-point range and north of 50% from the floor. And this has been a William and Mary team that has been very good to the over this far this season. Not the case on this site, but they do find a way to persevere. And College of Charleston, they find a way to persevere. They were about a 4.5 to a 5.5 point favorite. They get the job done on the road against Campbell, 67-61. The finals, Campbell, 2 of 21 from 3-point range. They lose a rebound battle by a count of 45-30. As off the bench, 11 points, 15 rebounds out of Lazar Jokovic. So the Joker was able to have himself a nice night. And Charleston, despite the fact that this was not a normal 3-point shooting night for them, they only go 8 of 26 from the outside. They do find a way to get the job done. Also, Drexel now 11-6 against the spread. In Delaware, if you had this one like I did, I laid 10.5 with Delaware. Some places offered this at a 10, like minutes before tip, 84-74. Just all sorts of brutality, as Delaware up in this game by 16 points with about 2 minutes remaining, and then somehow, someway, Stony Brook is able to cover this game on just some tomfoolery at the end. So that was not great, to say the least, but what has been pretty amazing as well is taking a look at the party out there in Conference USA, Miley Cyrus's favorite conference, as Middle Tennessee has been your best cover team. They are 10-4-1 against the spread out there, but how about what you've been seeing out of old Liberty Bibberty? They are now 10-5 against the spread, but that was actually 10-4 entering into the night on Thursday, as they fall to UTEP 72-70 as a pretty sizable favorite. UTEP goes 8-20 from 3-point range. They win the turnover battle by a count of 12-8 for Liberty. You had 20 points off the bench from Talon Peter, but was not enough in this one, as for UTEP, they did a rock-solid job of being able to hit their free throws. 12 of 15 at the charity stripe. Liberty, 11 of 17. So they've got nobody to blame but themselves. And this team has been less than profitable for you. Sam Houston State, one of your worst cover teams in all of college basketball. They are now 3-12 against the spread. Kennesaw State, we give our own to Lane Kiffin. Go Owls. They get the job done in this one. 75-69 in overtime, as Sam Houston State had a 10-point lead with about 12 minutes and change remaining. And then they made like your buddy at the bar and could not close. And Sam Houston State somehow way loses this game, despite the fact that Kennesaw State shot 3 of 26 from 3-point range. For Sam Houston State, they win the turnover battle 14-13, but they lost the rebound battle 53-46. Been a lot of tomfoolery this year for Sam Houston State, so not great out there. What has been pretty solid, though, has been backing this team, as you've got Kennesaw State at 9-5 against the spread. You've got Louisiana Tech at 9-5 against the spread, but that was after they didn't cover against Jacksonville State, who's also now 9-5 against the spread. Jacksonville State, home underdog, gets the job done, 63-61. The final, as Louisiana Tech goes just 8 of 32 from 3-point range in this one for Jacksonville State. They've got one of the top scorers in all of college basketball, Jerron Pierre Jr., top 5 scorer in all of college basketball. Just 13 points in this one, but still was enough for the team to be able to get the job done out there. Oregon State is going to get this cover, by the way. I do not know if they're going to be able to win this game outright or not. I have to have this podcast up by midnight Pacific time, but as I am doing this with about a minute remaining, they're up on Gonzaga 91-89, and if I somehow, someway, speak too soon and Oregon State does not cover this number, that would be horrible, because this would send them now to 14-4 against the spread. But as I do this with a minute remaining in overtime, Gonzaga actually got to overtime because Oregon State was up three, did not foul, and then three goes in, of course. But for this Oregon State team, you've had Nate Kings be a king for them. 3 of 4 from three-point, entered in the night, shooting about 48% from three-point. As of right now, they're winning that turnover battle 11-9. Have lost a rebound battle 38-27 as another big night for Graham Ike, 26 points, 9 rebounds, but certainly a very fun matchup out there. And I'm currently doing this as CSUN is taking it to Hawaii. Right now, we're about midway through the second half with CSUN up by kind of 53-37. And Hawaii has been a interesting team, to say the least, as far this season. And this has been a CSUN team that is another one of those Big West teams that I think have been very striking this far this season. They entered in the night 9-6 against the spread, looking like it's going to be going to 10-6 against the spread. And as I'm doing this right now, Hawaii, a nice whopping 2 of 15 from 3-point range. Meanwhile, our good friends over at CSUN, they're getting a whole bunch of production out of their starting five. As for their starting five, with 12 minutes remaining in the second half, have been able to put up double figures. So nice effort out there. If you're looking at outliers, overs, and unders. South Dakota, another over for them. 14-2 to the over thus far this season as they knock off Oral Roberts 92-82 the final. I wrote up the under in this game, of course, and you saw in this game a lot of tomfoolery as you needed about 20 points in the final 3-plus minutes to be able to get it over. Somehow, some way, it does go over the total, so you got that going on as Oral Roberts didn't really do their part from 3-point range. They went 12-31 from 3. They ironed out after a rough start to the game, but still, this was a South Dakota team that was able to find a way to be able to get it done at the free throw line. 25 of 30 at the charity stripe. So they get the win, they get the cover, and they get you yet another over. North Florida has also been one of those good teams to the over thus far this season. How about 12 overs to 3 unders for them? And for North Florida, they get a win against Central Arkansas. This by kind of 92-80. They just barely cover that minus 11.5 number as well, but that total is set at 157.5. They're able to go over. This team has been a flamethrower from 3-point range all season long, and North Dakota has also been one of your better teams the over. How about 13 overs to 4 unders for them this far this season? They really didn't do their part with this total, but South Dakota State did. 109-73, blowout city in this one, as South Dakota State has been a little bit down with their 3-point shooting this year. They shoot 65.5% from the floor, 14 of 27 from 3-point range. This was headlined by the fact that you had Joe Saylor sail away with 25 points. So that was pretty interesting, to say the least. UMBC has also been a really good over team for you. 11 overs to just 4 unders. And for UMBC, they end up losing outright to New Hampshire, 79-76. And this is a total that was in the low of 150. So this goes over as New Hampshire, 13 of 31 sizzler from 3-point range out of them. That has been uncharacteristic of them thus far this season. UMBC loses the turnover battle by a count of 12-10, so that was another fun one out there. And then Northern Arizona, the old Lumberjacks, have been a really good over team for you thus far this season as well. So they're up to 10 overs to just 4 unders, and for the Lumberjacks, they get the win, they get the cover against Sacramento State. This was a game that went under the total, but Northern Arizona takes care of business. 77-53 the final, and the only reason why the under hits in this game is that the game just completely slowed down to a crawl at the end of it. You only had like a combined 10 points in the final 4 minutes of the game, so that hurt the total just a scoge. But for Sacramento State, 5 of 29 from 3-point range, not savory for them. Meanwhile, Northern Arizona, 12 of 27 from 3-point range. Right now, your top under team is obviously Kansas. 1 over and 15 unders thus far this season. It's going to be hard to dethrone them for that, but Lipscomb has been one of your better under teams in all of college basketball. How about 4 overs to 12 unders for them thus far this season? They just absolutely pound the tar out of Bellarmine. 87-53 the final. This does go under the total of 143.5, and for Bellarmine, it looked like they were going to be able to hold in this game. They were down 36-32 at the half. You were feeling good about things, and then Lipscomb comes out and they have a 19-0 run in the first 8 minutes of the second half to really bury all hope for poor Bellarmine. As a matter of fact, it was even more than that. I believe it was actually a 25-0 run for Lipscomb on Bellarmine. So Bellarmine does not cover the plus 14.5 that they had as a home underdog. As Bellarmine, 7-26 from 3. Lipscomb, I've been talking about 3-point shooting positivity for them, 15-35 from 3-point range. Stetson has been an almighty fade this year, and they don't cover another spread. Queens NC, 95-60 the final. Oy vey, this has been bad for Stetson thus far this season. And if you've been betting unders in Morehead State and UMKC games, you've been able to do quite well out there as well, along with Austin Peay. Austin Peay, just 4 overs to 12 unders. This one went way over. They got the job done outright on the money line against Eastern Kentucky by kind of 97-90. They went 19 out of 34 from three-point range. I would say don't count on lightning striking twice with that one, but for Austin Peay, they were finally able to get themselves an over, but for Moritz Aiden and UMKC, both of these teams, four overs of just 11 unders thus far this season. For UMKC, they slowed down North Dakota State. They were able to get a cover in this one. They lose by a count of 71-64 as they were about 8 to 8.5 point underdogs. And for North Dakota State, 9-26 from three is actually cold for them. And UMKC, 14-40 from the outside. A little bit of a low scoring slog in that one. And then you did see out there in the Ohio Valley, Moritz State, they do get the win, but no cover against Western Illinois. 51-47, the final is. These two teams both shoot below 34% from the floor. This game was a slog as both teams only had 6 turnovers in this game, so kept it relatively clean there, but that was very much not great to say the least. And Sacramento State, by the way, 5 overs is just 11 unders for them, so they have been one of your better under teams in all of college basketball. If you're looking at teams that have been not profitable against the spread thus far this season, Sam used to say it is not tied with Minnesota with just 3 covers thus far this season. Grand Canyon, they've had just 3 covers thus far this season, but they took out their frustrations on Abilene Christian, 88-58 final in this one. For Grand Canyon, they go 8 of 16 from 3, but what they did was they won the turnover battle 19-13. They won the rebound battle in this one as well. And for Abilene Christian, they shoot 31.5% from the floor. So that was a little bit less than tremendous. Bellarmine is now 4-13 against the spread. We went through them a little bit before. And this has also been a team that has been less than profitable for you against the spread as well. Interesting with Northern Kentucky. I have to go back to this one from last night since I excluded it. They lose Cleveland State by a count of 76-58 as they are currently now 5-13 against the spread, so that's been less than tremendous. And brought up Kelsey Fullerton a little bit before, now 5-11 against the spread for them. And Weber State, cannot forget about Weber State. They are now down to about 4-10-1 against the spread as they played themselves a nice low-scoring slog on Thursday as well. For Weber State, they do find a way to hang in there against Montana, but they lose, and they were about a pick'em in this game, so they do not cover this by a count of 63-59. Montana finds a way to get the job done, and Weber State actually shot 7 of 18 from three-point range, but lost the turnover battle 11-8. They lose the rebound battle 34-30, so they get punked on their home arena. And if you're looking at the betting trends that we're seeing right now in college basketball, it very much has been a 50-50 sort of season on pretty much all fronts with regards to totals. If you're looking at the underdogs, though, they have been able to do a nice job of barking all season long. They are 170, 165, and 3 against the spread over the last 7 days. And over the last 7 days, 166 overs and 167 unders. Doesn't get much more equal than that. And if you look at the season to date, 1,409 overs, 1,407 unders. So, once again, about as even as it gets. Meanwhile, underdogs for the season hitting at 50.6%. 1,427, 1,392, and 40 against the spread. So, that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now. And that's what we all got on Thursday. Now, let's take a look at just some of the nooks and crannies and what we're noticing in college basketball with our good friend Justin Perry. He does amazing work over at Chocolate Events, and he joins me next right here on Cusco Seats with myself, Greg Eats Peterson, now a part of the Decent Family Podcast. Welcome back to Lovey Las Vegas for Cusco Seats with myself, Greg Eats Peterson, now a part of the Decent Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got Justin Perry aboard. He does such a tremendous job over at Chalk Quality Bets. Taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. I know that he's been dialed in on everything that we've been seeing these last few weeks. He does a tremendous job with the Justin Perry Show as well. You're able to catch the SQ Bets and everything that they do live as well about 3 times a week. That has been a lot of fun to be able to dive in on and to be able to follow Justin on Twitter/X. That's at his first and last name, Justin Perry. Last name spelled P-E-R-R-I, number 8, all together. And Justin, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, always so much fun to be here. Unfortunately, you know, we get so inundated with 300 games a week that it's kind of hard to get the Justin Perry Show going every week, but we definitely are on BetCast Wednesday and Thursday nights, having a great time with it, live betting our butts off. There's really no better way to say it. We put down usually about 20 bets in 45 minutes powered by our shot quality data. And of course, that's what I use to power all of my analysis, because I've fervently believed for many years and shown time and time again that it is some of the most predictive data that really does just give me a massive edge up on the market, and is honestly does a lot of the legwork for me and makes me look a lot smarter on this show than I probably am. But you know,
absolutely, you are one of the smartest men out there, so being able to give you a tool like that, It's like handing the superhero another, shall we say, element as well. So I always do love that. And Justin, you do such a tremendous job taking a look at this game of college basketball and just what has been working for you over the last few weeks so well, because it has been a really interesting scene in college basketball where we've had a lot of ups and downs. We haven't seen as much in terms of like favorites or underdogs really running away with things. Things have ironed out a little bit more. Bookmakers have made a lot of adjustments, but yet you've been able to pick them off so well.
Yeah, I think right now, as we get into the meat of conference season, you have to start to trust what you're seeing here and now. You know, it is almost a little bit of a second season. And what I think I'm learning is that some of like the expected regression that we're seeing from the non-con, you know, it's almost reset a bit. Yeah, like you're probably not going to want to really determine expected three-point rates for an SEC team based on how they allowed spacing in their non-conference games, right? So you really want to narrow in and try to find edges based on what we're seeing now. And usually that means figuring out how these teams are playing each other in terms of their strategies and play types and defensive schemes, and figure out if you can find, you know, holes within the matchups such that, oh, this team's going to struggle to defend how this team generates their looks from three, or the way that they run the pick and roll is going to really free them up under the basket. And maybe they're going to have more room than expected from the mid-range. And that means in a tight game that you're going to expect team X to succeed more than team Y. Like, these are the types of things you can start to develop out of the games we have in the conference now, because we're six, seven, five games in almost all 30 conferences.
Yep, it has been wild what we've been seeing in terms of some of these conferences as well. And how much do you take a look at some of these teams that are in a conference where there's a distinct style? Like I take a look at the Southland, for example, and most of those teams, they're looking to generate a lot of turnovers. When it comes to a conference like the SEC, it's a little bit more unique, but you've got a lot of teams that are looking to push pace as well. How much do you take a look at some of these teams that are looking to play in sort of an opposite style, like in an up-tempo conference, a team that's looking to play slow and vice versa, a team that's looking to play fast in a slow conference? Because I think that these are some of the more unique teams to be able to handicap, and these are the teams that I think that you can make a lot of money either betting or fading, because it feels like they either do demonstratively well or demonstratively awful within the conference without a lot of in between.
Oh yeah, it's very matchup to matchup. You can almost go back into past matchups to understand how the coaches have attacked it. You know, like maybe it's a team that presses at a high rate. Maybe it's a team that, you know, consistently is running, you know, a specific version of three-man weave into like some weird horns elevator crap. I don't know. I'm not the biggest X's and O's guys. That's one of the things I want to work on as I continue to get better at this. But I know that in terms of the way the action is generated, there's some value in understanding the way coaches are going to approach these unique defenses or offenses or tempo challenges.
Yep, absolutely. I think that those are always things to take a look at. It's Justin Perry who does such great work over at Chalk Valley Bets. He's joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And with just how you do take a look at these teams' tempo, how do you gauge it? Just because I know that there's always a theory that it's a little bit easier to slow down a fast team rather than it is to speed up a slow team, but I feel like there have been a lot of examples to the contrary. Like I take a look at a team like Samford, they've really been able to get their tempo. Obviously, a team like Alabama, they're always flying up and down the floor, and I feel like that might have flipped a little bit more over the last few years, because I noticed that there have been some teams that play very slowly that they're able to be sped up by some of these very demonstrative, shall we say, high octane offenses.
It's tough. That's definitely like something that I'll go and try to use maybe like an outside resource for, because tempo is so paramount to shot quality, but it isn't necessarily something that we, I would say, have a lot of data on the site. When you're trying to consider how a team's going to do against some of these different styles, I love what Evan Mia does with that, but I think he has some of these pace adjust metrics that do a really, really good job. And you can really just see when teams struggle or succeed with dealing with types of paces. Like Gonzaga, of course, loves to play fast. Kansas likes to play fast. Texas Tech and Purdue like to slow it down. Texas A&M likes to slow it down. Wisconsin's going to try to go fast on you. And like, so is Texas. And then, you know, so he has stuff like that for all teams. And so when I see a challenge, an outlier to the type of tempo that's in a specific conference, or just what a team's used to seeing, or maybe it's just different than what a team wants to play, right? When we have the polar opposites across the sphere of Division One, that's when
Yeah.
I'll go and try to use that data.
Absolutely. And I do think that that is so interesting to be able to gauge. It's so interesting to try to be able to parse through because that's one of the great challenges in handicapping college basketball. But that's what makes it so much fun as well, because I know that you do a little bit of NBA, and what I think sets college basketball apart from so many other sports is just the wide variety of styles, because you just don't find this in the NFL. You don't find this in really any other sport other than college basketball, where you have two complete polar opposites trying to go at it with one another, and you have to try to find out which strength is going to wind up winning when two teams are just completely on other ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, well, the spectrum's smaller, right? The NBA, you have, like, I was looking into it, I think it's a couple weeks ago. I tweet about everything I kind of think about. My Twitter is just like my personal journal. I for myself, and I don't really care that I have 17 whatever thousand followers. Like, I just put out what I think is cool, and that's why it's grown to this point, in my opinion. So I was talking about, how this kind of looks, and some of these teams, it's, I don't know, it's interesting. There's a lot that you can kind of get into, but at some point, like, where you draw the line with it, I don't know. There's a lot to delve into, but it's not exactly a science. And I think that at some level, you just kind of want to evaluate it as a way to kind of gauge the number of possessions more so than something to just naturally hang your hat on.
Yep, absolutely. I think that that's a good way of going about it, as we do have Justin Perry, who does such great work over at Chalk Wally Best, joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And in terms of teams that you just have been taking a little bit more of a liking to, slash you've been a little bit more sat down on, have there been a few teams over the last few weeks that you've just been identifying and have been either treating you really well or really not so well over the last few weeks? Because we are reaching conference play, we're noticing some of those teams that maybe played a fluffy non-conference schedule, I think that that's the best way of putting it, have been getting eaten up a little bit more. And some of these teams that challenge themselves, like in Alabama, even though a few nights ago didn't necessarily go their way, these have been the teams that have been able to rise up.
I think I get a little bit of a time to victory lap a little bit here, Greg. I know I've mentioned them on this show before. I've mentioned them almost
Oklahoma.
everywhere. Oh yeah, well, not Oklahoma for me, but for me it's Louisville. I've been beating the Louisville drum probably for about a month, and they have done obviously very well in their last six, seven, eight games. They are the clear number two team right now, in my opinion, in the ACC. It is obviously a very long walk to get to Duke, but still very much of an accomplishment. I think they are safely in the tournament right now. There's no way they should even be in bubble considerations or discussions. They are like 13-5 in their Division One games, and we expect them to be 14-4, so a little bit better, but verifying that they are this team, and they've done very well for me. I've been on them heavily every single time they go out because they are developing the best shot quality in the nation. And I say developing the best shot quality in the nation because sometimes when we say, oh, shot quality ranks them as number one, people go, what do you mean they're the best team in the nation? No, I'm saying they develop the best shot quality in the nation. That is a little different. And yes, that should be predictive, but the thing is like shot quality is such an alternate universe that it is not necessarily one to one to the best team. Guys like, Jonai Broome and Cooper Flagg make very interesting differences when you start to consider how they impact shot quality and then how teams are developing shot quality. And so when you talk about any one specific game, you really have to get into an individual matchup. So yeah, Louisville's doing it. They look great. They've been doing very well for me. On the opposite side, fading Cincinnati has been very good for me the last couple of weeks. Someone that's kind of been stymieing and maybe difficult and doing the opposite of what I want to see. Usually, I feel like that's like the mid-majors I get that feeling about, but checking back in like the last week of my results, I lost that Stanford game. The travel spots in the ACC, the home teams have been doing pretty well. I lost both Stanford and that Cal game. I took both those big road dogs. It did not go well for me. Another team that's been doing really well that just got me another nice win, cashed both of Minnesota's last two games against the spread with them winning outright against Michigan. But let's see, and I lost that Northwestern bet, that plus three line the other day on Sunday, I think that was. And then some other teams that may be giving me some trouble recently, taking a peek back to like Saturday. James Madison was a little bit annoying.
Oh, I had that one on Thursday too.
Yeah, that was not fun. They've been a little bit of a tough one. Marshall game, and they also didn't cover on Saturday as well on the 11th. So they've been a little bit down. Probably means there's a pretty good buy spot. And oh my goodness, I can't tell you. I think I'm ready to give up on Cal Baptist. I think I'm just officially ready to give up on Cal Baptist. They're losing to Tarleton, I think, right now as we talk. They might be that bad.
Yeah, with Tarleton, they've been able to turn the corner a little bit more because they had a lot of guys that were out of the fold to begin the season, but still a team that is turning the ball over left, right, and sideways. That has been less than tremendous, to say the least. And man, there have been some strange beats over the last few days, to say the least, as well as Justin Perry, who does such a tremendous job over at Chocolate Valley Bets, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And that actually leads me to something as well, because you mentioned that Marshall game that we saw against James Madison. James Madison had full control of that game. And has it been just me, or have I noticed more blown leads than ever before? And I know that you do a great job with regards to live betcasts as well. Have you just been taking a lot of these teams that they get down double figures? Because I feel like if you just take the team that's covering at the first half and you fade them in the second half, you probably have made a lot of money thus far this season, because it feels like the team that covers the first half doesn't do so in the second half every time.
Yes, live betting has had some very, very lucrative days for us at Shot Quality. I think, like, my Saturday show, I went 13-3 or something like that. I've had a few crazy results like that. And I think actually we did that again tonight. It's been really lucrative to trust games to get back into a more of a contention, where especially when you have like a small spread and you're beating the spread by like, I don't know, 8, 10 points against the close, 6, 8 points against the close. And you have the data showing that, it's not that they're not getting looks. It's not that they're, not getting to the rim. It's not that they're not taking threes. It's just they're missing shots. College basketball, that is a game of runs. And it's not because of anything else other than luck and poorer quality of play than you see in the NBA, which leads to streakier shooting, streakier teams, because it's a lot more variable, right? So in the NBA, when guys get hot and they're in their form and you have the best players in the world, and you have to like keep in mind that the NBA is essentially a 0.01 fraternity of honestly genetic marvels. I hesitate to use any other word because that's what it is. And it's like a family business now, and half of the players are related to former players because it's that tough to get in and be good at shooting and have the athleticism. Like it's crazy, be that tall. So when you see the NBA, these are the best players basketball's ever had, ever. And yeah, when they get hot and they have their shooting form down and their motion feels good, they don't miss. But that doesn't happen in college. Only a few guys in college every year go to the NBA and actually make an impact for an entire career. Most fizzle out who go, most don't crack starting lineups. We don't have much NBA level consistent talent, shooting talent at the college level. So we can rely on the people who got hot just saying, hey, that's probably not them just having an insane night and they're not going to miss for the rest of the night. It's just probably some good variance. And that means more likely than not that we're misjudging how good they're playing right now and we should be going against them. And it works. It works like a charm. And it's nothing too crazy. For all honesty, it is not as lucrative as it once was. 2 years ago, it was a lot easier, but you can still do it. You can still beat the market. You can still find those spots, especially if you learn to sort of use the data alongside like your own in-game analysis as, a basketball expert, watcher, gambler, whatever it is.
Absolutely. And then, Justin, is there anything that you're taking a look at for Friday that is catching your attention? Because we have a very small slate on Friday. I wish I would space out these games a little bit more, because we've got 150 on Saturday. We've got like 10 on Friday. And then on Sunday, we're going to have the latest game tipping off at like 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So that has been grinding my gears just a little bit. But that said, anything for Friday that you might be taking a look at?
Yeah, the only respite this week is, of course, we get a nice day game set on the holiday of Monday, which would be fun.
Yes.
But yeah, Friday, honestly, I wish it was a little more spread out. I also kind of like having the one night here on Thursday where I will get a little bit of a rest. Still will look at a few games and make sure that I have everything lined up. But in terms of what I'm seeing, it's pretty sparse out there. I'm probably only going to have like two or three plays. It's not as NAAC heavy because I think they're playing some Saturday games this week with the holiday. I'm not even sure. Schedules are getting weird. A lot of Horizon on the board, some Big East games as well. Boise State is probably going to be my pick of the day if I had to guess. I haven't really done the handicapping yet, but I know they're one of those shot quality darlings. I actually just sprinkled a 250-1 tournament ticket on them just for fun because I had like a $10 free bet or something at a book, $5 free bet. And it's a good price. We like like them a lot. So I do think that'll probably come out as like a New Mexico minus 3 or 4, KenPom at 2. So we expect a little bit of a boost to the conference home team in the Mountain West, especially at the Pitt, which is maybe one of the best home courts in the country. That'll be a good one with Boise. And then another team that's kind of been someone we bet on over at SQ is DePaul. So probably looking for them to continue to do pretty well. You can probably continue to fade Green Bay, who's hosting Robert Morris, which means you'll likely have some resistance. I think Green Bay covered against Milwaukee as well. So maybe that home team will get a little bit of love. Robert Morris, I do think, is pretty good right now. So I like that. Other than that, looks pretty good. Indiana, Ohio State's probably the marquee one. Iowa, UCLA, pretty interesting too. A lot of eyes on UCLA to figure that out. And then, of course, I'm sure VCU St. Joseph's is going to go to double overtime. I don't know why you wouldn't be taking every single A-10 game to go to overtime right now. You just can't solve anything or be a single possession game. VCU at St. Joe's projected to be a 2-point game. I mean, if there was a double overtime line, I'd think about it. So give me Boise for sure.
Absolutely. And those Atlantic 10 games have been absolutely crazy. And the fate of UW Green Bay, this is a line that started out at 4. It's went to 5.5. Can totally understand why when you've got a guy that is a radio show host that's trying to coach a college basketball team. Typically, shot quality doesn't like those teams. Neither do I in terms of my bankroll. But a guy that I absolutely love having aboard here is you, Justin, because you do such an amazing job parsing through all of this data, doing an amazing job being able to decipher this game of college basketball. Let the good people at home know it's on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Oh, for sure. It is going to be an amazing next, 12, 16 weeks here at Shot Quality Bets. And just with me personally, it is go time. I mean, I do every basketball game you can imagine. I think I have a play on. Everything is powered by a lot of data, not really too much human interaction with it. It's really sharp data. And I do the show with a couple of my co-hosts twice a week on Wednesday and Thursday nights, and then also the special Saturday day game show at 2:45 p.m. All that streams right on Twitter, so you can find it very easily. Basically, everything I do, I have to go through there. And then, you know, if you want to do a little bit more, chat with a couple like-minded people, I have like a free Discord for the show, the Justin Perry Show, that I don't tend to enough. Trying to put out as much stuff as I humanly can and win some bets. We had another good night on BetCast, it's looking like. So again, the live betting, I really do think, is the future. I kind of think it's the future of just betting in this country. We see how betting markets mature overseas, and getting a leg up on it and starting to learn how to do it and use this technology and get this expected data into your processes is my biggest recommendation. I wouldn't be here putting my name behind it if I didn't fully believe in it.
Absolutely. And for those that don't know about the overseas market, you actually have more bets that are being placed in game rather than prior to the game. So, very astute point there by Justin, as Justin does such an incredible job taking a look at this great game of college basketball. And every single time he joins me, lends such great insight. So, a big thanks to Justin for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast that give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we have some bank shots. Here in Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Craig Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Justin Perry. He does such amazing work over at Shot Quality Bets, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, lends such great insights. Did so once again today. So big thanks to Justin for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at GNN_D1. We are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is pretty much time order today. We've got no games on the extra games board or anything like that, so that keeps things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. And how about if we do get things started with 875-876 on the card? It is Ohio, and they're on the road against Akron. Akron does find themselves as 2.5-point favorites. So this game is between 158 to a 158.5. This time I total 156.5. I'm going to be one want to dive in on the under, and this despite the fact that I'm going to be writing up Akron, and the big reason why I do like this Akron team, they at home have been a top 30 team in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. They have been really dominant with that regard, and you've got an Ohio team that they should see some positivity with this, but they're allowing opponents to make 40.1% of their three-point shots. That is the second-worst mark that you're going to find in all of college basketball, and it's been an Ohio team that's been pretty solid with regards to their offense. You've got the AJs, AJ Clayton, along with AJ Brown, both being able to supply you double figures. Clayton has been your main guy. He's been able to supply the team with about 16.5 points per contest, and it is an Ohio team that they shoot about 37% from three-point range. This is despite the fact that Jackson Pavelski, who comes on over from Wofford and Iowa State, has been giving you 12 points, 5.5 assists, but he's only shooting about 28.5% from three-point range. Ohio, relatively solid at being able to take care of the ball. They turn the ball over about 12 times per contest. Considering their tempo, that's relatively okay. And for Akron, they've really cranked up their tempo. They've been a top 75 team with regards to total possessions per game. Do you think that John Gross is going to be able to get the team going a little bit more defensively as they've been outside the top 160 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, but you've got the Johnsons, Nate and Tavari Johnson, who've done a nice job supplying the team with a combined about 24.5 points per contest, and then Isaiah Gray has been one of your main outside threats, as he and Sharon Young have been able to combine for about 18 points per contest. They both shoot north of 40% from three-point range, and James Okunkwo should be able to win that battle down a little bit over a block, 8.5 rebounds per game. This has been an Akron team that has been able to do a relatively solid job of being able to cut teams off from the interior top 150 team with regards to opponents' two-point shooting percentage. They've been able to do a nice job of being able to generate some turnovers as well. Top 150 team in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. As a matter of fact, a top 100 team with that regard. And do you think that they're going to be able to force Ohio into just a few turnovers? Again, that Ohio defense should see a little bit of positivity with the way that they're able to guard the three-point arc. But do you think that Akron going to be able to do a solid job in this game as well? So, did sell my total 156.5. I'm in on this total under. And with regards to my write-up, one delay with Akron set them as a 6.5-point favorite. 877-878 on the betting board. VCU is on the road against St. Joe's. St. Joe's hopes to not be average Joe's as two-point underdogs. Total on this game is 142, and I'm going to write up St. Joe's as I do like them outright on the money line. This has been a VCU team then. Has been rock solid with their defense. They're a top 50 unit in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, but this is also a VCU squad that isn't quite the same with regards to their three-point shooting defense away from home rather than at home. At home, they allow opponents to shoot less than 30% from three-point in a roadside shooting court environment. This balloons up to about 34.5% from three-point or outside the top 175 with that regard, and this is a St. Joe's team that's very much geared around their backcourt. You've got a trio of guys, Xavier Brown, along with Eric Reynolds and Derek Simpson, who've all been able to supply double figures, and for Reynolds and Brown, they've been able to give you a combined north of 8 assists per contest. This is a unit that overall they've been shooting in that neighborhood about 35.5% from 3 points, even though Reynolds and Brown have been a little bit cold. And the reason why is Rasheer Fleming has been absolutely tremendous. A block and a half, nearly 2 steals, 16 points per game, shooting 44% from 3 points. And Anthony Finkney, he's not necessarily going to give you a ton of scoring at about 6 points per contest. He's shooting 52.5% from 3 points. He's been absolutely ridiculous for this unit. You've got a St. Joe's team that has also been dealing with some, shall we say, bad variance. Opponents at the free throw line are shooting 76.5% against them. That's a bottom 15 mark in all of college basketball. Those are some of the things that you do want to take a look at for teams that should be doing for some positivity and negativity. And for this VCU team, they do not shoot north of 76% at the free throw line. Right now, they're about 70.5% at the charity stripe, with having quite a few guys in the backcourt doing a nice job. Joe Bejmeli being your top scorer with about 16.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. Good versatility out of this team, as you've also got Max Scholgo's able to give you 15.5 points, 5.5 boards. He's been your main facilitator with 4 assists, 2 steals per contest. And for this VCU team, they've done a nice job generating turnovers. Top 35 team in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, but it is a team that they don't necessarily do the world's greatest job in terms of guarding the arc when they're away from home. This has been a team that they themselves have been hit or miss from 3-point range. They're only shooting about 31.5% from the outside. That's a big way that you need to take down the St. Joe's team, as St. Joe's has not necessarily been the world's greatest team at being able to guard the 3-point line, as well as St. Joe's is allowing these teams to shoot in the neighborhood of about 31.7% from 3-point range at home, which that's a top 150 mark, but not too much beyond that. But I do think that St. Joe's, in a game that I think is going to be a little bit more dip and tuck, you've got a VCU team that isn't like super duper slow, but they certainly put the clamps down on defense. They look to really take the air out of the ball. They're about 235th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. They're going to be able to slow it down quite a bit. Did sub that total at a 135, so I'm in on the under. I do like St. Joe's outright on the money line in this spot. 879, 880 on the betting board. Villanova plays those super Providence. Providence, an underdog of 7.5 to 8.5 points, and your total on this game between 141 to 141.5. For Villanova, I did set them as an 8.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the 7.5 to 8. Eric Dixon continues to be the top scorer in all of college basketball, supplying this Villanova team with north of 25 points per game. And despite Villanova being outside the top 330 in terms of total possessions per game, this has been a team that has really been able to crank up that offense, as you've got beyond what you're able to get out of Dixon, Jordan Longino, along with Jamari Brekus, who have been able to combine for a little bit over 21 points per contest, with Poplar, he shoots 35.5% for 3-point range. Wuka Poplar throws in there 14.5 points per game. He also gives you about 6.5 boards, a steal per contest, so been loving what I've been finding out of him. And then in Yakubo Yaki, has been able to give you about 6.5 rebounds. He's been a nice rim protector for a Villanova team that all of a sudden is in the top 50 with regards to rebound percentage, and Providence just doesn't necessarily provide that. Providence has been obviously without Bryce Hopkins all season long, so they've been trying to make it mix and match. You've got Jaden Pierre, who's been able to give you about 13 points, 2.5 assists per game, and then Jabari Abdul-Rahim just continues to be a big disappointment. Only about 5 points per contest out of him. Corey Floyd gives you a little bit in the backcourt, but for Providence, they shoot about 34% from 3-point range. Nothing great, nothing awful. This is a Villanova team that ranks outside the top 220 in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, but it's a Providence team that's now outside the top 100 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis themselves, and this has been a Providence team that, when they've been away from home, they're allowing opponents to shoot 38% from 3-point range. When they're at home, that number goes to about 26.1% from 3-point range, so they've been a completely different team on the road. I just don't know if you get enough possessions for an over in this game. You've got a Providence team that still right around about 300th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. They've been hit or miss from three-point range, and I do think that both of these teams buckle down just a scoge more with regards to defense, so semi-total at a 140.5, here at 141, 141.5, and on the under, but with Villanova, willing to lay up to 8 with them. 881, 882 on the betting board. Robert Morris is on the road against UW Green Bay, and UW Green Bay is a home underdog of 4 points, and total on this game, you're finding it at a 147.5. This will be another game that I write up. I set Robert Morris as a 6-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number with Robert Morris. They go up against a UW Green Bay team that is just doing everything badly. They're outside the top 275 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per possession basis. In terms of percentage of their missed shots that they turn into an offensive rebound, they are dead last in all of college basketball. Anthony Roy was their top scorer. He was supplying them with 25 plus points per contest. He is currently out of the lineup, so right now relying upon Marcus Hall, who's able to give you double figures, and really not a whole heck of a lot else. They brought in the international man of mystery, who's able to help them out just a little bit as well, and I'm not even kidding when I say that UW Green Bay, for some reason, they decide, hey, we're going to bring in this guy by the name of Mutan Levy, who I believe was out there in like Turkey or something like that. He's given the team 7.5 points in the 3 games that he's played, but hasn't given them too much of a boost as they've lost all of them. And for this UW Green Bay team, they don't force any turnovers. They really allow it from 3-point range, and Robert Morris should be able to control the battle on glass. This has been a team that's been in the top 125 with regards to rebound percentage. You've got a guy in Alvaro Forgulius who's been able to give you 12.5 points, 10.5 rebounds per game. His rebounds per game, that's a top 25 mark in all of college basketball. And Cam Woods was out with an injury for a little bit of the early part of the season. He's come back. He's been their top scorer. 4 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, 14 points per contest. Doesn't necessarily shoot it well from 3. And Robert Morris is whole. They only shoot 30% from 3. That's outside the top 3 internationally, but they get a bunch of second and third chances. They should be able to take it to a UW Green Bay team that really doesn't have a lot down low. And then you've got guys like a Josh Imajafo, who's been able to give you 12 points per contest. You've got 4 separate guys that give you at least 11.5 points per game. Do think that Robert Morris takes it to a UW Green Bay team that's right now coached by a team that moonlights as a radio show host. So did semi-total at a 144. UW Green Bay, ever since Roy has been out of the fold, they just really have not been able to get past the 70-point plateau. And this is a Robert Morris team that has been turning the ball over north of 13 times for contest. Not necessarily up tempo Robert Morris team, so I'm in on the under, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 5.5 here with Robert Morris, 883, 884 on the betting board. Young South State is on the road against UW Milwaukee, and UW Milwaukee does find themselves as 5.5 to 6-point favorites total on this game. It is 144, and with UW Milwaukee, I set them as a favorite of 7.5 points. So here at the 5.5 to 6, I'm going to be willing to lay it. It's a Young South State team that has been much better defensively this year than they have been in the past. They're a top 80 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but CW Milwaukee team, I think, is just going to be able to plow on the glass. They're a top 20 team in all of college basketball in terms of defensive rebound percentage. You've got Jamichael Stillwell, who's been able to give you north of 11 rebounds per game, and he should be able to dominate down low. Now, for the CW Milwaukee team, they haven't turned the ball over a little bit too much, as they are turning the ball over north of 12 times for contest, so that has been a little bit less than tremendous, but you still have guys out there in the backcourt that I really like, as you bring in the Louisiana transfer in Themis Folks, who's been able to give you about 15 points, 5 assists per contest, shooting about 35% from three-point along with Kentrell Pullian. They've dealt with injuries to guys like Faison Fields, Eric Pratt, but John Lovelace has been able to step up. He's been able to give the team right around about 6 points per contest, and Youngstown State just continues to be one of the worst three-point shooting teams in all of college basketball. They've been able to get some relatively nice versatility out of Nico Galletti. He comes on over from Sacred Heart, and he's supplied the team with 12 points, 6 boards, 3 assists per game. And then down low, you've got one of the best shot blockers in all of college basketball. 7'3", Gabe Dines has been able to give you about 3 blocks, 7 points per contest. And I do like what E.J. Farmer brings to the table in terms of 14.5 points per contest, but again, not really giving you a lot from the outside. This is a team that as a whole, they're outside the top 275 with regards to their three-point shooting percentage. It's been a team that's been relatively okay on the glass or within the top 225 with that regard, but I do think that for this UW-Milwaukee team, they do a nice job, be able to find a way to be able to win from within, and I'm going to be willing to lay the number with them. And this is still a Youngstown State team that they play at a relatively brisk pace. It's a UW-Milwaukee team that they've been a little bit more up-tempo, but once again, not necessarily a team that's going to be running it and gunning it, as Youngstown State about 61st in the country in terms of total possessions per game, UW-Milwaukee 130th, but do think that this game comes down to some late game following semi-line at a 7.5, so willing to lay with UW-Milwaukee, and I think you come up just short with the total semi-total at a 143.5, so you're at the 144 in on this total under as well. 885, 886 on the betting board. Indiana's on the road against Ohio State. The Ohio State University is a 7.5 to an 8-point favorite, and total on this game between 148.5 to a 149. Now, what we last saw out of Indiana was very much less than savory, but I'm going to be willing to take an A-plus here. I did set them as an underdog of 7 points. For Ohio State, they've been a pretty solid defense when they've been at home. A top 75 unit in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and this has been an Ohio State team that has been able to shoot it much better from three-point range when they've been at home rather than on the road as well, shooting 40.6% from three-point range at home, more like 32% when they've been on the road. Meanwhile, this has been an Indiana team that has been hit or miss with regards to three-point shooting, and Malik Renu missed the team's last game. He's their top scorer with about 14 plus points per contest. There was in their 5 boards per contest as well, but I think that even though he's going to be out of the fold, this team should be able to do still a solid job down low. You've got Umar Bello. He gave a little bit of a lack of effort on some of those plays a few nights ago, but that said, 8-plus boards. He's able to supply this team with about 14 points, multiple blocks per contest, and Mackenzie Mbakpo has been able to give you good versatility, shooting 36.5% from 3-point range, 12.5 points, 5 rebounds per game, and still have a backcourt that has been turning the ball over a little bit too much, a 12.5 turnovers per game outside the top 150 in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, so a little bit less than tremendous there. They've been able to do a nice job of being able to cut off the 3-point line, though, as this has been a team that has been allowing opponents to shoot just over 31% from 3-point range with this Indiana unit. It has been a bunch that has been about 65th in the country with that regard. Meanwhile, for Ohio State, this is a bunch that they've been really good with their 3-point shooting defense, especially at home. They're a top 25 squad with that regard. And when it comes to Ohio State, you've got two guys that have been able to bomb it at north of 40% from 3-point range, as you've got John Mobley, who's been able to shoot north of 40% from 3-point range, along with Bruce Thornton. Thornton has been able to give you 14.5 points per contest, so absolutely love what he's been able to bring to the table as well. And for Ohio State, you've had down low Devin Royal, who's been able to give you some plus rebounds per game, but I still do think that Indiana is going to be able to do a solid job on the glass. This has been an Indiana team that the defense has been a little bit suspect recently. They're outside the top 125 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis when they are away from home, but I do think that they're going to step it up a little bit here after being embarrassed at home a few nights ago. I did set my line more at a 147 with regards to total, so I'm in on this total under, and with Indiana, made them a 7-point dog, so I'm going to be willing to take those points. 887, 888 on the betting board. DePaul's on the road against Georgetown. Georgetown does find themselves as a 9 to 9.5 point favorite. Total on this game between 140.5 to a 141. So Georgetown is a 9-point favorite. 9.5 is my buy point on DePaul. DePaul's really had a tough time in those step-up games, but we saw a few nights ago a very spirited effort against Marquette. Have to like what you saw there, and this has been a DePaul team that has been outside the top 275, though, in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis away from home. They've been a top 50 team when they've been at home. So, I mean, it very much has been a tale of two, shall we say, cities. When they're at home, very good. On the road, not so much. They haven't turned the ball over as well about 13 times per contest, and they go up against a Georgetown team that has been amazing with their defense. Georgetown is a top 20 unit in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Connor Enright, he's been rock solid for this football team. 7 assists. He only gives you about 7.5 points per contest, but flows some good offense. CJ Gunn along Jacob Myers have been able to combine for about 25 points per contest. Myers shoots about 39% from 3-point range, but there's also a DePaul team that ranks outside the top 150 with regards to free throw shooting percentage as well, and this has been a DePaul team that has been a bottom 50 squad in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. Georgetown has been a little bit hit or miss from 3-point range, as they themselves have had their turnover woes turn the ball over north of 13.5 times per game. They're outside the top 250 in terms of ball security, but been able to get a lot out of Malik Mack along with Micah Peavy in the backcourt. These two guys combined for about 8.5 assists per game. They both give you 13.5 to 14 points per contest, with Mack being your main three-point shooter at 37%, but where the team is really going to be able to win the battle is down low. Thomas Horber has been incredible. 14 points, 8.5 boards, 2.5 blocks, a little bit over a steal per contest. Not going to give you a lot from three, and this is a Georgetown team that they could use a little bit more depth. Caleb Williams has been able to come on a little bit more recently for the team along Jordan Burks, but outside of your starting five, you don't necessarily have a ton. But Jaden Epps has been a nice three-point shooter for the team at 39%, gives you about 13 points per contest, and Georgetown is a better team at being able to generate turnovers in this spot as well. They're a top 100 team with regards to turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. Has been a little bit hit or miss with regards to the way that they've been able to guard the three-point arc if there is one weakness with regards to their defense, as this Georgetown team is allowing opponents to shoot north of 32% from three-point range at home. But that said, I do think that Georgetown is going to be able to do a solid job of being able to get the job done down low. But again, with this DePaul team, I do think that they found a little bit of something in that game against Marquette. I do think that they're going to exploit this Georgetown three-point shooting defense just a scotch. So, semi-total 141 here at the 140.5 in on the over, and at north of 9, going to be willing to take those points with DePaul. 889, 890 on the betting board. You've got Iowa on the road against UCLA. UCLA is a favorite of 7 points at your total on this game between 154 to 155. And with this total, I set mine at a 152. I'm going to be in on this total under. You do have an Iowa team that's gutting it. They're in the top 50 with regards to total possessions per game. And obviously, this has been a tremendous offense, ranking in the top 25 with regards to points scored on a per possession basis. We always find this with Iowa, though. Not quite the same team when they're away from home rather than at home. They're scoring about 14 to 15 points fewer per 100 possessions in a road slash neutral court setting rather than at home. And for Iowa, they are about 160th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. No doubt that's a little bit of an issue. But for UCLA and all that has went wrong for them the last few weeks, this has still been one of the top defensive units in all of college basketball. 16th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis at home. This has been a top 10 unit with regards to turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And to the surprise of many people, Iowa has all of a sudden been able to generate some turnovers. That's the one thing that they've done well on defense. Iowa, in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, not necessarily that they're on UCLA's level, it's right there, number one, number two in all of college basketball, but they're a top 50 team with this regard. And for Iowa, you do have Josh Dix, who's able to really bomb it from the outside. He's been shooting well north of 40% from three-point range. And as a matter of fact, you take a look at this Iowa team, their top five scorers, I believe that all but one of them are shooting at least 35.9% from three-point range, as Peyton Sanford has been able to give you 17 points per contest, and Owen Freeman give you 2 blocks, 6 half boards, 17 points per game. I absolutely love what I'm seeing out of him. But for UCLA, Tyler Billadeau has been able to do a nice job lending some good versatility. He had 6'8", has been shooting it at a nice clip from three-point range. He's supplying the team for 14.5 points, shooting 39% from three-point range, also in their 5 rebounds per game, while Kobe Johnson is that ultimate stat sheet suffer. 2 steals, 3 assists, 5.5 boards, 8 points per game. Who knows what you're going to be able to get out of this UCLA team, because Mick Cronin has alienated much of the roster as well. This is a tough travel spot for Iowa, but this is game number 2 out there on the West Coast. They played against USC a few days ago. I think that they're going to be able to find their sea legs, and just frankly, I'm not liking the current form of this UCLA team. I did semi-total 152. Do think that this is going to be a little bit of a lower scoring game. UCLA hit or miss from 3-point range, so I'm in on the under, and here at 7, going to be willing to take those points with Iowa. 891, 892 on the betting board. It's Air Force on the road against Fresno State. Fresno State is a favorite of 3 points, and total on this game, it is 143. And with Fresno State, I set them as a 7.5-point favorite. Willing to lay the number, and I wrote this up. Air Force has been one of the worst teams in all of college basketball, being able to hit the offensive glass or just not generating for themselves any second chances. And this has been a Fresno State team that has done a stunningly okay job of being able to generate rebounds. I'm not going to call them amazing, but about 107th in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Meanwhile, for Air Force, they grab 15.7% of their missed shots when they're in a roadside shoot curve environment as a offensive rebound. That is a bottom 5 mark in all of college basketball. Now, good news for Air Force is that they are starting to get Bo Becker back. He was out for the beginning part of the season, played opening night, and then missed like 10 games. He's been eased back into the lineup. He's only given the team like 3 points per contest, so he's been a relatively non-factor. We'll see if he's able to do anything moving forward, but that means that everything's been on the plate of Ethan Taylor, and Taylor has been incredible for this team. Above 15 points, 6 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals per contest, shooting 39.5% from 3-point range. And Wesley Chalkowski has actually been able to supply the team with about 9.5 points per game, but he's a true 7-footer that triples and 2.1 rebounds per game. As a matter of fact, outside of Taylor, you don't have a single guy in the roster that gives you north of 3.5 rebounds per game. And though this Fresno State team is by no means some sort of a dominant team with regards to generating rebounds or anything like that, this is a unit that should be able to win that battle down low, as you've got Mikal Robinson, who's been able to give you some very nice versatility, as he's been able to supply the team with a little bit over 10 points. And it is a Fresno State team that, on top of that, they started out the year very brutal from three-point range. In their first 7 to 8 games of the season, they were shooting much less than 26% from three-point range. And really, ever since the beginning of the month of December, this has been a mid-30s three-point shooting team. Well, not amazing again, but Zion Collins has been able to shoot about 38.5% from three. He gives the team 13 points per contest. Jalen Weaver has been able to shoot in the mid-30s from three-point range. He gives you about 11 points per game. They do need to clean up some of those turnovers. They turn the ball over about 13 times per contest themselves, and they themselves well outside the top 300 in terms of opponent's two-point shooting percentage as well, so they can get gash on the inside. But again, what is this Air Force team not doing? A lot on the inside as well. I do think that Fresno State starting to come around just a little bit more. I recognize that they took that bad loss a few weeks ago against Colorado State, but really other than that, they've been able to hold in there in a lot of these Mountain West games. I do think that they get the job done on their home floor. So I set my line at 7.5 with regards to Fresno State. I'm going to be willing to lay it, and I wrote it up and did somebody total 143.5. If you have a Fresno State team that's in the top 40 with regards to total possessions per game, and even though Air Force is playing as slowly as they do, they are well outside the top 225 towards points allowed on a per possession basis. So want to lay the number here with Fresno State, and I'm going to be in on this total over as well. And we wrap things up with 893, 894 on the betting board. New Mexico is playing against Boise State, and Boise State does find themselves as a underdog of 3 to 3.5 points. Tallinn's game is between 152 to 152.5. Wrote this one up as I set New Mexico as a 5.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number for New Mexico. I think that they're going to be able to do a pretty rock solid job down low against a Boise State team that has Dykeson, Dagenhart, Omar Stanley, pair of guys who are able to give you 5+ rebounds per game. So they've been able to do a solid job there. It is a Boise State team that's about 200th in the country with regards to their 3-point shooting percentage. They've heated up a little bit more recently with Dagenhart. He was shooting for much of the year below 25% from 3-point range. He's up to about 31% from the outside, so he's been able to do a little bit of a better job there. And then Javon Buchanan has actually been your main guy from the outside. 10.5 points, shoots 37% from 3-point range. Alvaro Cardenas flows some good clean offense, 7 assists per game, fewer than 2.5 turnovers per contest, but it's not a Boise State team that's going to put you under too much stress. They only generate about 11 turnovers per contest. Nelly Jr. Joseph, I think he's going to be able to win that battle down low for New Mexico, as he's been able to give this team north of 10 rebounds per game. Additionally, Donovan Dent has been one of the better facilitators in all of college basketball as well. He's been able to give the team 19 points, 6.5 assists per game. True Washington off the ball has been able to give you 10 points, shooting about 37.5% from 3-point range. It is a New Mexico team that they need to do a better job of being able to guard the 3-point arc. They've been outside the top 340 in terms of their 3-point shooting defense. But again, Boise State, not necessarily an amazing team from 3-point range. And New Mexico is one of the better teams at being able to generate turnovers, 41st in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis at home. I do think that having to go to the pit is going to be just a little bit too much for New Mexico in this spot. And additionally, the ancillary pieces like Mustafa Amzil have been able to really kick it up for this New Mexico team as well. Amzil has been able to give you 13 points. Stands in the neighborhood about 6'9" or so. He's been able to give you a little bit of versatility. Throws in there about 6 rebounds per game. I do think that this New Mexico team finds a way to get the job done at home against Boise State. So to set my line at 5.5, I'm going to be willing to lay it in. Interesting tempo war. You've got Boise State outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. New Mexico is a top 10 team with regards to total possessions per game. I landed on a total of a 151.5, as I do think that New Mexico is going to improve that 3-point shooting percentage defense just a little bit. So here at a 152 and on the under and one delay of New Mexico, and that'll wrap things up for the Friday edition of Coast to Coast Superstar, part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Justin Perry, who does such great work over at Shock Wally Bets. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Superstar, you're able to subscribe wherever you hear podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to find those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at GNN_41. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So, as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like here on this podcast via that 5-star review. And I'm coming at you guys every single day on this podcast, regular season and off season. So, I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.